rides his pony down life's lane, searching for the why of all the pain he knows. It'll never be the same.
Hey, Legs.
Good morning, Lizzie.
How are you?
I'm grand.
We are day five of our first Punk Bicycles Week, and we're going to kind of rotate this through with the other things, and it's been really, really fun. Have you enjoyed it?
This has been one of the best weeks I've had doing the episodes, but just period in my life, and I'm really excited about today. I'm going to try to keep my enthusiasm tempered.
I'm excited too. I'm excited for what you're going to talk about. Where today's episode is Punk Bicycles, OGs of Bicycles. And I want to start off by letting you know our definition of punk in case punk comes up in this whole mix of things. We've decided recently that, you know, punk is everything, and what it means to Legs and Lizzie is unity, DIY, nonconformity. I changed that from individualism to nonconformity.
I like that.
Like individualism is just kind of doing things for yourself.
Exactly.
Versus the community, and nonconformity kind of.
I like that.
Okay.
I like that.
Strength. Well, let me start over. Unity, DIY, nonconformity, strength, speaking out against injustice, community, compassion, equality, and peace. And damn good music.
Yes.
That's
of all
an
times.
But
yes.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. I like that.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Obviously, these are work in progress, but
right.
The main thing being when we talk about punk, things being punk, to start with a definition. And wanted to remind everyone we have a free download of seeds we like, just a cool list of seeds. It's time to plant your seeds. Probably getting a little behind the eight ball. We've been so busy. And, every day this week I've been had it on my list, seeds. So next podcast will be, we're taking 2 days off, and then we'll record again. We're doing five podcasts a week, and so hopefully by the next one we record, it'll be like the seeds are planted.
Seeds are in, the weather will be cooperating too.
And yeah, it's
ready
so
to go.
I wanted to start off sharing something that's OG. And I want to admit that I didn't even know what OG was, because I'm a dork. And,
not really, but yeah.
I think Legs can attest to the fact that I really am guarded about what I watch and listen to. And I feel like that is just something that in pop culture I haven't been exposed to. And I don't live in a hole, but I don't, you know, just, yeah, I listen to some podcasts, and I probably need to get my news from more often, and from, we've talked about having some select sources, and when I met Legs, you know, you were kind of reading more things, and I would kind of say, I don't want that.
I learned early on that you didn't want things in your brain. So I've learned
certain things in my brain, and also not generic news, like
correct.
Not sensationalistic news or news. There's a lot of news out there that's from content creators that say five things to do this. Here's three things
right.
to do this. And we were going camping once, and you sent me a camping list, and I remember saying, did you even read this list?
Yeah.
But it was a fine list. But
you helped me though. So you make me now look deeper. Well, first of all, I don't send that stuff to you, period. But now you make me look deeper at the source. So you have a valid point that news media is driven towards sensationalism and that immediate, you know, burst out there of information. And if we're talking about the slow life, we've talked about slow journalism, and there are people that are trying to not do that type of journalism, and that's really where we want to focus our energy towards in getting our information. So you helped me, you know, really realize that I was caught up like everybody else in like I don't want to be sitting there and watching the news and ready to throw the clicker at the TV anymore, and I don't. So you've helped me get over that and be more selective on where we get that information.
Well, thank you. I like when you send something and you know, we say to each other, this is kind of what it is and why we're sending it. I think that's nice for whoever's on the other end. To know, okay, what about this made you stop and send it and why? So then they have a little summary. I think that's a polite thing to do. And I had an idea for future. We're rotating through the week. So next week, unless we change it to Punk Love or Punk Life, next week will be a week of Punk Farm. And when we get back to bicycles, I thought it would be fun to interview each other. Because this next thing I want to talk about, which is a U.S. bike company, it's in one of my books, and I was thinking it'd be fun for you to interview me, and I can talk more about my books. And then I would love to interview you, because you are an OG of cycling, well, in my opinion.
Maybe a little bit. I mean, they'll probably learn a little bit when I talk about this OG.
But there's things that I know a lot about you, but there's some things that I probably, if I was interviewing you, might dig a little further.
I would love it. You know, not a lot of people know, because I'm fairly private. And yeah, so that would be wonderful. And I would like to know more about, you know, when I got started to get to know you, I was truly amazed on how much you did know about cycling. Especially when you sent me that piece you wrote about the Giro, which is a tour of Italy. I went, wow, she knows about cycling. Wow, this is like getting interesting. So yeah, I'd really like that.
Yeah, I wrote a little piece. When you write a book, you can have a free download of a short story or something. I wrote a piece about a woman writing one of the Giro tours, and it was a little romance, and
yeah, it was really well written. And then I said, wow, she knows about the little pieces of it.
It's from research. You can research anything. So I do. I don't think I could have written it if I hadn't cycled. So that's true.
Exactly.
So OG, it's not old guy. It's original gangster. And I'm sure everybody knows that except for me. I looked it up. Someone or something that's an original or originator, especially one that's highly respected or regarded. And what I pick for an OG of bicycles is a company called Worksman's Bicycles. And I found this company when I was and you're lucky I forgot my book, because I was going to read another passage. But towards the end of the book, the president of the United States, African-American woman in her 40s, which there are a few of those that I think would be wonderful. Our current vice president, or also, I think when I wrote it, I had Michelle Obama in mind, which I don't think she'll ever run for something like that, but she'd be awesome. And I wanted to have a U.S.-made bike for that scene. And so she rides a Worksman Dutchy Brooklyn single speed is the bike. Oh, I see, I have it in my notes. I didn't have to close my eyes and get my brain to remember it. If you're watching YouTube, you saw me close my eyes. And when I put that in the book.
You make me laugh.
Yeah. I always joke about the cogs, like when you hear me pause, like the cogs they're dirty till finally clicks into place and the words pop out.
Yeah, usually when there's a pause, there's something good coming after it. So that's what I've learned.
Sweet.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Well, I've already said on the podcast that's why they have 1.5 times and 2 times. It's for when Avis is speaking. I have another podcast that I won't mention again here, but when I wrote about that bike in the book, I thought, oh, I'd love to interview the person that, you know, works for this company, Worksman, and his name is Wayne Sosin, and he was so gracious. He wrote back, he said, you know, thanks for letting me know about your book, and yes, I would love to talk with you. So I never made that happen.
Oh, you didn't.
And so my other podcast is a little, it's about peace and not so much about cycling. So I think he would probably say yes for us. But in any case, I wanted to let you know, it's, I pulled what they say in their about section, and their goal has always been, I'm going to read, to make the world's finest heavy-duty bicycles and heavy-duty tricycles, a little something we like to call Worksman Tough. We hope you will agree. Many Americans were first introduced to Worksman, don't read with me, generations, not you listeners, but my partner.
No,
legs.
No, I'm listening to you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Were first introduced to Worksman generations ago when the famous Good Humor ice cream man would ride through the neighborhood ringing the familiar bells on his Worksman ice cream tricycle. Actually, Worksman started long before that, back in 1898, when Morris Worksman established Worksman Cycles. His belief was that a well-designed three-wheeled cycle could replace the horse and wagon by providing a less expensive and more reliable way to move people and products over urban terrain. As it turns out, his philosophy was correct. A quote from Morris is, "Our goal is to bring a more efficient, reliable, and healthful transportation to modern industry," 1898. Original credo still holds true today. Morris Worksman's first industrial tricycles were used in New York City by local businesses who performed deliveries. Little has changed in the 120 years since. With today's escalating fuel costs, the need for aerobic conditioning, and the desire to reduce fumes and lower costs, there has never been a better time to incorporate Worksman heavy-duty bicycles and tricycles into your plans. Whether you're a facility manager at a Fortune 500 company that needs to haul cargo around a large factory, a small business that needs tricycles for local deliveries, or an individual needing a specialty cycle for personal use, Worksman is the right choice. Many people are discovering Worksman specialty tricycles, such as our side-by-side team dual trike, the family chariot pedicab, BAV personal activity vehicle, and that's kind of not an incumbent, but a lower. They designed it to be very, very comfortable. So as we phase into our older years, we will
talk
be moving
yourself.
Into
yeah.
moving into yeah. something. But yeah. why I think they are punk is that they have continued this mission. They've stayed true to this industrial heritage and just bring this well-made bike. Their first factory stood on the footprint of what would later become the World Trade Center. And I just love this idea that, you know, they're promoting this cargo bike throughout the city. So they have, they're not all tricycles, of course. The Dutchie that I mentioned, or the Brooklyn, I guess. I didn't go through all their different models, but you can design a custom Dutch-like bike for about, or pick the different, you know, I didn't count them all up. It looked like about 20 different options for about under $500.
Really?
Yeah, and have a nice, sturdy bike. And then the other tricycles. And I think we have a dog carrier that Teo didn't like, especially he tore through the fabric. We need to rebuild it and make it tougher. But I could see one of us with him, another one with a kind of a cargo grocery thing, and we'll see. But what do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I think it's amazing that company stayed in business this long. They're, you know, and they're building, I'm assuming it's made out of steel, so they're using steel mm-hmm. bikes, and they probably really last a long time. And if they've been around this long, they must be doing something right, and people want their bikes. And so I did not know they existed until you. You know, I don't know everything about cycling, but I didn't know, especially a U.S.-made bike in New York City. So I'm actually going to, you know, get on their website and see what bikes they have. Maybe they have a used bike out there, you know, that would fit me. And we can find out.
Yeah, and the price is such that
exactly, I didn't even know. Yeah, that would be.
And it's worksmancycles.com, and we'll put the link in the show note. Worksmancycles.com.
Right on.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Listening to that.
You're welcome. And I didn't read. I promise you, I didn't read.
Oh no, it's no worries. I have my notes in front of me, so
I like to hear your. I like to hear your voice anyway. So it's good. So now we're going to talk about an OG. So I used to think, so honestly, I wouldn't call myself a dork because that's sort of a weird word. But I thought at first like OG could be like originally good or, you know, not gangster because gangster connotations. So let's just say the person I have chosen for today, I wouldn't call him a, you know, original gangster, but he's originally good. He did things that... at a time that nobody was doing, and he stayed true to himself, and I've picked him for a lot of reasons, and I'm excited because this is one man of all the cycling people out there, that racers that I actually admire, and his name is Sean Kelly. He's an Irishman who raced in the 80s. That's when he was most successful, retired in 94. He stays involved in cycling, and I want to talk to about him because, and why he was chosen to be the first one, because he embodies everything we've talked about being punk, and he probably didn't realize he was being punk, and what our beliefs are. His successes are enormous. So what I'm going to, instead of giving, they call him Palmares, which is be like all the races he's won and all this stuff. What I will say is, you know, he's one of the most successful racers ever in the 1980s of everybody. And, you know, remember that's a Greg LeMond era part of it. And anybody that follows cycling, Bernard Hinault, etc. But he was successful at the races I care about. Most people follow like the Tour de France. For me, the races that I care about the most are actually happening right now, and they're called the Spring Classics. And so he became a professional in 77 and retired in 94, and he won 193 races. That really doesn't tell the story. And so for the listeners, if you're interested in this and you want to know what these classics are, and they're going to be on the television, the Tour de Flanders is on March 31st, and that's in Belgium. And then you have Paris-Roubaix, which a lot of people have probably heard of, on April 7th. And then my favorite race is Liège-Bastogne-Liège, which is on the 21st of April. And that was such my favorite race, and when you interview me, I'll explain why I moved to Liège, Belgium, because of that race, because of the history. These races have been around since the late 1800s. They're brutal, and only a man like Sean Kelly could be this successful at doing these. But the thing was, is that this guy, Sean Kelly, grew up in a farm in Ireland. His brother was the one, older brother, that started racing. And typical, I guess, in their life, as his brother Joe did something, Sean would follow. Sean enters a race, he ends up beating his brother. You know, he's regularly winning as an amateur. And so he just kept doing this, and just going back and working on the farm. He left school at 13, figured probably he's going to work on the farm the rest of his life. And I think he was okay with not think. From what I know of him, I think he'd be fine working on a farm his whole life. Lived with his parents. So as he's getting ready to participate in the 1976 Olympics, he and some riders went off to South Africa when you're not supposed to be, you know, doing anything there. And so they got, they weren't allowed to participate in the Olympics. So that sort of was fortuitous because that led him on to his professional career in a way, because a team had contacted him before that to race. He said no, which was typical for him. But then he said, okay, what am I going to do? So he contacts them. They get back to him. Now, I'm telling you this because... Sean Kelly is willing to work really hard, and if money is involved, even harder. You know, he knew that if he, you know, no formal education, he had to take care of himself. And so when he found out, when he signed with his team, that he would get 4 francs for every kilometer of a race he won. In that year, in 5 months actually, he won 18 or 25 races and went home with money in his pocket. So because of that, you know, it's a small, small, close-knit community of racers back then. It's a European sport. Ireland does have some really good riders. So it wasn't unheard of that they wouldn't, you know, have heard of him. So a team hears of him and decides, okay, we're going to go try to sign this guy. Now, this is typical Kelly. He doesn't know this is happening. He's gone back home to the farm. These, you know, people from France get in a private jet, fly to Dublin, and drive to this little town he lives in to this day, Carrick-on-Sur, and go to his home unannounced, unexpected, and his parents are there. Is Sean home? No. Where is he? He's out in the field driving a tractor. So they're in a taxi, and they have interpreters and everything because they're all French. So they drive out there, and as they're driving, they're met with this tractor coming at them head on. And suddenly it stops. They get out, walk up. You Sean Kelly? Yes, I'm Sean Kelly. And then they go back to the home and try to negotiate with him. They offer him, I think it was, they offer him 4,000 pounds plus every, you know, incidentals and stuff to go race. He says no. Goes back to the farm. So then, and this is typical for him. This is why this is, he's, you know, an OG. This wasn't done back then. They all had, you know, lawyers and people represented him. He always handled his own contracts. A man with hardly any education handled everything. He was a DIY guy before he even knew he was DIY. So he goes and negotiates a contract. He gets 6,000 pounds instead of 4 and goes and races. Now, again, I could go into all of these reasons. What he did on a bicycle was just unheard of. There is a classic picture of Sean Kelly, but you wouldn't know it, but guy, people that race would, of just his legs. On the podium after a race, it's a classic picture. If you want to go and look for it, you'll understand why. It's a picture of Sean Kelly's legs, and it just tells a story. And they are like, okay, that's what kind of legs you have to race a bicycle in Europe like this. Okay, I get it. So why I think he's OG and he's punk, because he raced as his own man. He was being told what to do because that was how it worked back then. And he didn't follow the traditional norms. He, from the start, he did not conform to status quo. He did not take what these people were telling him to do. He did his own thing. He did what he had to do, and he changed his riding style to earn a living. But more importantly, because he was intelligent in other ways other than just a traditional book, he stood up for the small guys, for the smaller guys on the team that weren't as good as him, and the workers. And he stood up for their rights. He helped them become better riders, but more importantly, better people. And back then, it wasn't that way. It was where you had a team, you know, manager, director sportif, who told you what the rules were, how it was going to work, all the races, even though it's a team sport. It was, they were told exactly how it was going to go and who was going to win. And it's usually one or two people were going to win and the other people had to work for them. Well, Sean Kelly said, well, I'm not going to quite follow that. And because of that and that stubbornness he had, he forged his own path. And that allowed him to stand out, that then allowed him to go on and stand up for what he believed in and how other riders were treated in teams. And to me, knowing what cycling was like back then, because having raced in Belgium and in the Netherlands and France during that time, because we're basically the same age, which seems weird because I sort of put him on this. Don't put anybody on a pedestal, but, you know, I know how hard it is and how difficult and how entrenched the rules were back then. And so I have to, that's why I admire him. So he retires. He's been married since 1980 to the same woman. He lives in the same town, Carrick-on-Sur, that, you know, he lived in with his parents. There's streets named after him. There's a an auditorium, you know, a sports facility named after him. You go into every restaurant, there's pictures of him. But he walks down the street like any average person. The one story I have about that is that I was in Carrick-on-Sur. I specifically went there because I just wanted to see where he was from. And I'm, you know, I should say one rainy day, but it rains a lot in Ireland. I'm walking down the street. Now, this is when I'm still racing, so I look like a racer. And I'm walking down the street, and it was not my intention. I don't talk to people that, you know, are famous or, you know, have done something special, especially not in their own town. You know, give them their privacy. And so...
But you probably hoped to see him. I'm sorry to interrupt, but didn't you hope to see him? Why would you go to the town?
Not really. I just figured...
You just wanted to be there because
Yeah, I just want to take it all in. Like, it's also apparently a really historic town. I think, I don't want to give up misinformation, but I think there's a castle there that had something to do with Anne Boleyn and those, you know, I think Henry VIII and things back then. But I didn't really care about that. It's a really small town. It's a really cool little town in the middle of nowhere. So I'm walking down the street, just minding my business. I look up, and before me is Sean Kelly walking towards me. Now, I'm not going to say a word, but he goes, "Hey." And I go, "Hey." And I just keep walking by.
And that made your day, I'm sure.
Well, no, yeah, it did. But what happened was I walk like a block, and I go, "Holy, what have you done? You had an opportunity." So I turn around and try to run back to find him, and I couldn't find him, which is probably what fate was. But it made my day.
What would you have done if you had found him?
I would have shook his hand and said, "I really admire, you know, what you did on a bicycle." Not really much more. Not much more. You know, in other words, I didn't want to, I know he's a very shy man, and I'm going to read a passage here in a little bit to explain that. He's very quiet and very shy, which I always found sort of funny because after he retired, he became a commentator for cycling. But he's really quiet, and he was always quiet in school, and I just didn't want to embarrass him. You know, he's always seemed like a guy that showed up at a race, did what he had to do, went home to his wife. And so I just didn't want to invade his privacy.
But then you decided to by turning and running
it. Yeah, after the fact. And I've never, and by the way, I've never done that for anybody ever. No musician, no sports figure. I don't have any autographs from any people. I wouldn't have asked for his autograph. I find that actually silly, but that's me. So I just wanted to let him know that.
He could listen someday. So what did you want to let him know?
I admired just what he did to consistently do what he did on a bicycle, knowing how hard it was back then. You know, there is, I'm not saying anything out of turn. There was a lot of drug use in cycling. I experienced it, you know, against, you know, there's people I was racing against when I was there that was using drugs. It's been ongoing for a very long time. There's been nothing ever said that Sean Kelly ever used any drugs. So if he didn't use any drugs and he was racing like this, that's truly amazing. And he did things where, you know, there was, you know, he raced the Tour de France at a time when the green jersey was designed for, was one of the major jerseys for an all-round rider. And it's not really that way anymore. Now it's really designed for the sprinters. So there's only very few stages that you can get a green jersey a lot of points in. It's usually a sprinter, bigger guys, and the whole thing now is that if these big guys can make it over the mountains into the end, they get the green jersey at the end. During Sean Kelly's time, it was different. And so it was not just sprinting, but he could climb. And he could climb with the best of them at times. And to the point where, like, even Greg LeMond commented on how amazing that on any given day, Kelly could beat all of them. And so I just admire that. And there was times, again, because the equipment was different and so forth, that back then it was frequent that all of us would get saddle sores. And he would get them frequently. And he wanted to remain racing and staying like in the Tour de France so badly that he would have pieces of his saddle, and back then it was leather saddles, cut out where the spot was so he could still sit on the saddle and race for 6 hours. So now he doesn't have to do that anymore, but he still rides because I actually saw a YouTube of him riding with a guy on one of the famous downhills, climbs and downhills in a single day race in Italy. So after he raced, he founded an academy in Belgium, founded a pro cycling team, and still going on. I think he worked with Irish cyclists. And then the other thing is he's done charity. So he, for a cycling tour company called Blazing Saddles, raising money for blind and partially sighted riders.
Wow.
And that, you know, from this information, they've had tours, including a journey across America. And so, like I said, he was a shy man, let his legs do the talking, only, you know, left school, didn't have, you know, at 13. But 2013, they awarded him, the Dublin City University awarded him an honorary doctorate in philosophy as recognition for his contribution to the sport. So the guy has a degree. So go use it, Sean. You know, go do your thing. And then when I say about him, I'm going to read this, so bear with me. This sort of tells you why I admire him, because I was still the same rider. Didn't really say much. My attitude was just, if I'm going to suffer,
you're the same rider as Sean Kelly.
As far as my, no, hang on, I've got to finish. I was very quiet. I didn't talk, not like now.
Just teasing.
I was very quiet. I would show up to a race. I didn't speak French very well or Flemish. So my attitude was that I had to let my legs do the, you know, and my attitude, if I'm suffering, that means they're suffering. So let's just all make them suffer more. So a writer, Robin McGowan, who wrote this book, Kings of the Road, A Portrait of Racers and Racing, said about Kelly, and I'm going to read this because it's good. On the bench, swiveling his body away as you approach, chary of words, when not downright hostile, Sean Kelly remains for a journalist the hardest of the great writers to fathom. In an age when most of his brethren rate themselves and are paid according to the amount of publicity inches they have gleaned in a season, this farmer's son remains very much the exception, closed, withdrawn, and extremely suspicious. Yet, one only has to look at him joking with Stephen Roach, who's an Irish cyclist, a good one, or know the respect with which he is held by the peloton, to see that he gets along very well without us. So he's made a living in cycling without being, without being a hot dog, without, you know, a show off. He just went and did his business and went back to Ireland. And that's what I admire. And so, you know, some little tidbits. He was the last rider in the pro peloton to switch to clipless pedals. So for a couple of years, when everybody has switched to the clipless pedals, he's still riding in, you know, if everybody remembers, the toe clips and straps. And, you know, there's jokes that he still has the very first dollar he earned as a professional cyclist. And so that's what he's known for. So the biggest thing is this, besides being punk and OG, he is living the slow life. He is living the slow life in Ireland on his own terms. And that's something to admire. And that's why I chose him, and why he's the only cyclist that I actually admire.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Thanks. I know it was
awesome. I have a couple of questions.
Yeah, please.
One of them was that statement you just said, which you said at the beginning, which I thought you might have misspoke. That's a bit harsh.
What is?
Out of every cycle, he's the only one you admire?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, I mean,
this
I,
might be our last cycling episode.
No, as far as a pro cyclist, because honestly, ones that I did admire, who did things on the bike that I really found amazing, come to find out later they were using drugs.
Right.
And this is not the Lance Armstrong era. This is before that. Right. So guys that, like, there's one Belgian cyclist who was winning the Paris-Roubaix in the most amazing ways. And, you know, he was tight-lipped on the subject, and then he was found out later on. And what bothers me about that is that he still enjoys all the riches and the accolades and the admiration of people. But he cheated. I left Europe because people were cheating, and I was not willing to pollute my body and cheat to race a bike. And so I have never heard once anything said, and if somebody can come to me and say to me that they have evidence that Sean Kelly doped, then I'd listen to it, and if they have proof, you know, I'd, you know, maybe take back what I'm saying. But for all that I know about Sean Kelly, he's true to what he was and is, and that's the reason. Nice. So
and the privacy, to be a private person and not be, you know, so out there with everything, that's very admirable.
Yeah, he's not showy. He's not driving a big fancy car.
Right.
I mean, I will say, I'll take that. I do admire Greg LeMond.
Yeah, and I would also add that you have not been studying every single cyclist in the last, I mean, you do study a lot, but I bet if you dug into certain people, you would find some people to admire.
No, I agree, but I'm saying, agree. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So, to say that no one is worthy of your admiration.
No, but who am I to even,
statement.
Yeah, no, so what I'm saying is that, if you just add everything up. So I take that back. So no, you're right. That's a really good thing to say. So Greg LeMond I admire because I know he did not dope. He did things that were extraordinary, and he was doing it at a time when no American had ever done it.
Yeah, and we're already at 36.
Exactly.
Minutes.
So anyway,
I think
maybe
for another time on Greg LeMond, but I just, and then the other thing I wanted to know is he known for a certain team, or he moved around, so he's really just known as Sean Kelly and not for
no, he
for
was
a team.
One particular team was KAS. He was known for that team as a Spanish team, and he was known for riding one particular bike, which is a Vetus aluminum framed bike, mm-hmm. Which is a scary ass bike because it was tubes that were glued together. I rode one. And how he raced on in Europe on them, I have no idea. But and they're still around, and he still represents them. So they're still around, and they're not, you know, they're not making the same kind of bike, but they stuck around through all the years. So yeah, that's a good question. Koss was his. I still remember. I think it was a blue and yellow jersey, and
Nice. Good job.
Thank
that
you.
Was really,
thanks for listening.
Really well. I know you've talked about him and. I've seen that photo that you mentioned, the legs, and I know, you know, your Irish heritage, that you love many things Irish, and Sean Kelly is definitely way, way, way up on the list, and that was awesome.
Thank you.
To learn more about
that.
Thank
you. Thanks for indulging me.
Good job. Okay, well, we will, does that feel complete?
Feels complete. I think we'll... been a long one, and I thank you listeners for indulging me as well, and we'll have another episode for you.
Great.
In a few days.
Rogers Pony. See you soon.
Take care, everyone.
Down life's lane, searching for the why of all the pain he knows. Never be the same.
Thank you for listening to the Legs and Lizzie Punk Farm Love Life podcast. Please subscribe to get notified of new episodes. We'd love to have you as part of the Legs and Lizzie family. It really helps us if you also leave a review.
You can support the podcast by becoming a Legs and Lizzie patron at patreon.com. Just search Legs and Lizzie. You can become a member for as little as $5 a month. Podcast music is by Lizzie's brother, who goes by Squint Todd and the Horse Thieves. See the show notes for links to other things we mentioned.
Be safe and happy until next time.
Do stuff, make stuff, don't buy stuff.
Peace, punk, plants.
We don't need much, we just need each other.
There's a coyote in the pouring rain. Sometimes he thinks he can feel his pain, he knows it'll never be the same. His old black dog just tags along and listens while he sings his song. Love is all she knows. Thank you. the heavens. His only friend alone. On the wildest train he's riding. So damn few of all. There's Jimson Weed and Tom Weed. Join the party, join the crowd. Let the hyenas circling laugh out loud. There ain't no way. Lord knows he had his day. For strangers cry. Here it comes. If it has to happen, let them fight.